Now, where were you 45 years ago yesterday? What do you remember about this?
I believe that this nation should commit itself to achieving the goal before this decade is out of landing a man on the moon and returning him safely to the earth. We go into space because whatever mankind must undertake, free men must fully share.
The T-minus 30 minutes, 52 seconds and counting, aiming toward our planned liftoff time of 32 minutes past the hour, the start of our launch window on this, the mission to land men on the moon. Running. Lift off.
Go.
We have a lift off.
Go.
Lift off.
Neil Armstrong replaying their role in pitch moves.
Houston, Tranquility Base here. The Eagle has landed.
Roger, Tranquility. We copy you on the ground. You got a bunch of guys about to turn blue. We're breathing again. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Oh, happy day.
Oh, happy day.
Oh, a happy day.
Oh, happy day.
When Jesus wore.
And we're getting a picture on the TV. Okay, Neil, we can see you coming down the ladder now. I'm at the foot of the ladder. I'm going to step off land now. That's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind. Go ahead, Mr. President. This is Houston out.
Neil and Buzz, I'm talking to you by telephone from the Oval Room at the White House, and this certainly has to be the most historic telephone call ever made. For every American, this has to be the proudest day of our lives.
They are on the water. The astronauts are on the Pacific Ocean. Splashdown has been accomplished. And as we said, a few minutes before splash, they radioed all persons listening in on that frequency that everything was okay.
So, do you remember anything of it? I was born in 1967, so it was 2 years before. I don't remember anything of it at all. I don't remember if we even had a TV in the house at the time. But that said, it was one of the most watched TV events in its day. And Pat O'Mahony, who's a producer, TV and radio producer, has a keen interest in this subject. Why, Pat, first of all?
Because as a freelance TV radio producer, I'm constantly pitching ideas. And one of the first major ideas I pitched when I was in London for 11 years about, I suppose I pitched this first about 2002, 2003, maybe about 10 years ago, was there have been lots of major events that we've seen around the world. They've been witnessed by a global TV audience. And the reason we remember them is because they were seen live as they happened on television. And Apollo 11, the moon landing, is probably the first one There was the Beatles did a satellite link up that was seen live, but by very few people. Apollo 11 was seen by a global audience of about 723 million viewers in total on their black and white sets. At the time, that was about 1/5 of the Earth's population.
Well, that was huge, considering that everybody had a telly. Yeah.
What's interesting about it as well?
People, I know. I heard people talk about it before they went into hotels.
Yes, this is what's interesting.
To group around the telly.
How we watched it is very different from how we watch television now. Back then, it was a communal experience. People stood in the street looking at it in electrical goods shop windows. There were community halls where people would set up a television. People piled into their neighbours because very few people had televisions there. And yet, 94% of all Americans with televisions saw it. I mean, it was huge. And the stories of how it came to be seen live on television are fascinating. I mean, initially, they weren't even going to put a camera on the lunar module. The lunar module, as it was when they were designing it, was overweight. And cameras weren't as light as they are now. You can put a GoPro on your helmet when you're cycling around the place, and it provides high-definition pictures. Cameras then were big and were bulky. And they had to have a big public meeting where all the scientists said, hang on, the American public and the public of the world have paid for this. They should see it. So they had to throw off a load of the extra weight already in the lunar module to put in the cameras. And that was a last-minute decision. So we almost never saw it. And if you remember, people don't remember Apollo 12 because on the way up, the cameras, which were tube cameras at the time, the lunar camera was left pointing at the sun and it burnt it out. There are no pictures. So if we didn't see it, it didn't happen.
But it must have happened. Well, it did.
It did happen.
Well, anyway, we saw this and some people still believe it never happened.
Well, there you go.
In fact, I saw somebody say that, what's the guy's, Kubrick? Stanley Kubrick directed the whole thing. Was he even born at the time? I'm sure he was.
There is a movie about a trip. What's it called? Capricorn 1. And the fake one. Mm. And there's a hiccup and it goes wrong. And the guys are in a Hollywood studio somewhere. And yet the people on television are being told the thing crashed and they're going, should we kill the lads in the real astronauts?
And there's some great mock-up pictures. There's one famous one of the guys on the moon standing beside the flag, and you can see the moon surface and the background is all black, obviously completely dark, and you just see the cat's eyes behind them. And it says something like the cat's in the basement where they had and they reckon they'd made these little models.
Well,
you
like
see.
A backdrop.
The cat's in there looking at them.
Let's assume it did happen.
Okay, let's assume it did happen. So lots of things. The words, for example, it was a misquote.
Well, this is it. The first words spoken on the moon actually were weren't, you know, one whatever giant leap, because
one small step.
One small step. That's
man.
The one. Because the Aldrin before that simply said, "Okay, engine stop." But of course, that wasn't glamorous enough. That's not the one we remember. So, is it a misquote? Should Neil Armstrong have meant to say that's one small step for a man? And some people reckon he made a mistake. Other people reckon it was a technical glitch that we didn't get to hear the
A man. He actually said a man.
But he says a man. But actually, if you listen to it, he says that's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
Yeah, but he didn't write those words, did he? Do we know? Did somebody else write them? I mean, they must have pondered over this kind of stuff and said, well, you're going to step on the moon. The whole world is going to be watching and listening to this. You've got to say something profound.
He had a lot of time to think about it.
I wonder, did they really? Was there a chance he wouldn't have made it?
Well, of course there was.
Well, that was taken care of.
But therefore, I mean, was it a question of when they got there, you know, he had to think quickly and come up with it?
They would have had to sit down and think about, listen, this, as I said,
it's not like we are now.
This is America. This isn't just a few fellas going out on a boat.
It's funny you say.
It's like people think that you have 7 script writers out there writing all your scripts for you.
And he's only got 5. It's funny that you mentioned that maybe they weren't going to make it. What a lot of people don't know is that Richard Nixon's speechwriter had written a statement for Nixon to deliver, and if there had been an accident, he was due to say, "Fate has ordained that men who went to the moon to explore in peace will stay on the moon to rest in peace." He never got to say it. But he did speak to them live via the telephone from
which
the White House
cool.
on live television, which was fascinating.
Now, what's this about Buzz Aldrin actually peeing on the moon? How did he even do that? And is that true? Is that a load of nonsense as well?
Well, the thing is that Neil Armstrong was too good of a pilot. Mm-hmm. Remember that famous "we almost turned blue down here" in Mission Control? They were running rapidly out of fuel, and he managed to land it manually, very gently. He was supposed to land it with a bit more of a shock. and part of the legs were supposed to crumble, which means when you watch the footage of him coming down the ladder, he has to jump the last bit because he landed it so gently, the legs didn't crumble. So there was a gap between the bottom of the ladder and the surface. And when Aldrin was coming down, he had emptied his bladder into these, you know, packages that they have on them mm-hmm. that they can then store and you know, bring back or empty in space, whatever. But because there was that gap between the bottom of the ladder and the surface of the moon, he had to jump and he snapped the little piece of plastic.
Would that not all be internal? No.
Yes, it was. He basically walked around with his boots filled with pee. Now, he didn't say anything because it was a live feed.
Is this true now?
According to Discovery magazine, yes, it's true. It was the first I've heard of it. So, you know, I saw this over the weekend. I was intrigued by some of the stuff we don't know about the moon landing, you know, about the aroma of the moon.
What's it smell like?
Well, they said it was...
pee.
It smelled
clearly.
Exactly. It smelled like wet ashes and gunpowder. That's, you know, some people thought it might be flammable. It wasn't, you know, but that's the smell that the lads reported.
And then Mammy's worried about the son's not coming back
yes,
and all that kind of stuff. And the one I always feel for is poor old Michael Collins.
Michael Collins was
He was left behind, really. He didn't get to walk on the moon.
Yeah,
there were three of them went up. There was Buzz Aldrin, Neil Armstrong and Michael Collins.
Oh.
And poor old Mikey Collins, well,
it's
he
like
was left in the lunar module.
It's like the other member of the Beatles that
Pete
left.
Best.
Yeah.
The thing about Michael Collins is that he did
not
actually...
Not quite blooded, but anyway, go on.
He had no television coverage. So as he was orbiting the moon, he couldn't see the pictures that the population back on Earth were watching. However, he has something in common with China, Albania, North Korea, North Vietnam and South Africa.
What's that now?
And that's they weren't allowed to watch it either. No one in television was forbidden in South Africa until 76, so people could hear it on the radio. And the landing wasn't shown in China, Albania, North Korea and North Vietnam.
Why not South Africa?
It was.
I could nearly understand China because they wouldn't want anybody to think that the West was better than them and that the West had got to the moon.
It was considered a criminal technology under apartheid. And not until 1976 did South Africa's first TV set flicker into life.
Oh, I see. Okay. Mm. Well, they weren't stopped from watching it. They just couldn't.
They couldn't. There was no TV there.
Right,
exactly.
Right.
There was no TV there.
Now, we left stuff behind us as well. When I say we, I mean they.
Yes.
Not all, clearly.
I mean, every mission that went to the moon left stuff behind them. They left the flags. Like, funnily enough, when the lads were talking to Richard Nixon on the phone from the White House, Buzz Aldrin said the thing he was most worried about was the flag didn't go in properly, into the lunar surface. So he was just afraid that the flag would fall over on live television, the
what
American
was that,
flag.
How?
It was just barely held there, and there was no wind. So there was a piece of material holding it unfurled.
Okay.
So yes, they left behind a little plaque. Mm. They left behind cameras, like when you see Apollo 11 taking off, right? It rises up
and
off the surface,
the
and
surface,
there's a camera there, and that camera broadcast pictures to Earth until the battery
That's
went
one
dead.
Hell of a cable, isn't it? When you think about it. All the way to Earth. How many miles is it? Thousands upon thousands upon thousands.
So there was television cables. There was a camera, as I said. There was tongs and a hammer. There was like they've littered the surface of the moon in all the journeys they've made.
And
there.
Tell me, why was Aldrin known as Dr. Rendezvous?
Well, he didn't make it on his initial application to become an astronaut. And he tried again. And that's why they kind of figured he was always coming back for more. So he didn't get there on his first attempt. He was accepted when the third group of astronauts were enrolled in 1963. And that's why he became known as Dr. Rendezvous.
Anyway, do you remember it? Let us know. Text 51551, email mooney@rte.ie. And let us know where you were. Did you see it? I know some people saw it in the Shelburne Hotel. Isn't there a series on RTE TV about the Shelburne Hotel?
Shelburne's on
this,
yet,
by the way, Blanage, I hear your voice on a program called The Street, which is excellent.
Yeah,
about O'Connell Street on RTE.
Yeah, but I in fairness, I didn't make that program. Now I just put my voice to it, but it's brilliant.
It's very good, isn't it?
Moya Carney's the producer. It was just absolutely brilliant.
Is it just a one-off?
Yeah, it's
a one-off.
I thought
it was
and
a
you know what I loved about it? You know, you always hear Katrina's here as well. Katrina, you always hear the nightmare stories about O'Connell Street and it's rough and it's this, but this is a bit of everything on O'Connell Street. Mm. The guy who's selling the newspaper since he was 10. He's now over 60. Everything that is everything about O'Connell Street. The cleaners, that's what very interesting me. There's private cleaners that come in after, sort of, they're employed by the local businesses to clean up again, if you know what I mean. But anyway, it's a great,
no,
it's a great program.
Simon
yeah.
Community were out there, yeah. the guy who sells the flowers.
Everything was there. And it was
all human life is on O'Connell
and O'Connell
Street.
Street is full of, you know, it's, I know we kind of, I think O'Connell Street is full of tourists and sort of locals and that kind of thing. But in actual fact, only for the tourists, there wouldn't be any business on O'Connell Street. They keep the place really, really going.
Mm, a lot of people don't bother going down so much anymore, do they?
Yeah,
it needs something though, it's in dire need of something.
It needs so much. I mean,
it's no soul at all,
cinema.
I have to say.
That old, I actually think it does. No. Do you like The Spire?
I do, yeah.
I actually like it. Do you like it?
Yeah, I do like The Spire, I have to say. I'm nothing against it.
I think those who didn't like it have got used to it, and I actually think
it's funny,
nice.
It reminds me a little bit about the Eiffel Tower in Paris. When the Eiffel Tower was being built, everyone said, oh, it's a fierce waste, it's ugly, yeah.
And
now it's the symbol of Paris. I remember at the time, my young fellow who was at the time was very young, saying, be better off spending the money on hospitals. And, you know, he had a point. But actually, even he now thinks The Spire looks great.
Yeah, I think it looks really cool.
I don't know if it's a tourist attraction the same way the Eiffel Tower is. I mean, thousands of people go just to see the Eiffel Tower.
Yeah,
it is a landmark.
It is a meeting point, Derek.
It's
and
a
I
meeting
know
point.
For a lot
so
of
was
young
Cleary's
did you
clock.
Know that one of the people who objected to the
Eiffel... I'm nothing against
The
Spire. I'm just saying.
One of the people that objected to the Eiffel Tower was the poet Guy de Maupassant. And I heard recently that when it was built, he went every day and had his lunch just in a restaurant under the Eiffel Tower because he said it was the only place in Paris where he couldn't see it.
Ah! Anyway, thank you very much indeed, Pat, for that.